If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for January 14th, 2020. I'm trying to hype myself up. I'm Pat Contry alongside Ian Ferguson. Yeah. That's how Ian feels. All right, he's enthusiastic for you all out there.
What is this, episode number 194?
194. On episode 194, not counting some of our live appearances, it's officially 194. Pokemon Direct, Xbox One X won't have first party exclusive games for a year, allegedly. And a couple of things we forgot to talk about from CES, catch up, and as well as some Heritage Auction sealed WADA game news. We'll discuss there. Ian, how was your weekend?
It was good. Spent a lot of time in the kitchen. I recorded two episodes of Extra Napkins in one day. That was fun.
Wow, you do a rock block.
Yeah, that was...
Well, what are some of the topics?
Let's see, what did we do? What did
Marmalades?
What did we discuss this week? We discussed cooking shows.
Okay.
And then we ditched the monthly videos for Patreon, and then we just added a bonus episode and where we go and like review restaurants, and we did Chiba Hut this week. Okay. Chiba Hut's a little sandwich chain, but it's all like stoner themed.
I never heard of that before.
It's very, very good. Okay. I highly man, that place taught me the joys of a pizza sub with cream cheese on it.
I don't think I've ever had a pizza sub.
Holy shit, you've never had a pizza sub?
So, wait, hold on. It's mozzarella cheese, then cream cheese on top of it?
So, it's like a pizza sub in general is, I mean...
I've heard of it.
It's what you would think it is. It's pizza sauce, it's mozzarella, it's usually pepperoni, salami, et cetera, et cetera. You know, toasted up nice.
On a bun.
On a roll. Nice, like, garlic roll.
Sturdy roll. But, so, just double the carbs.
But, yeah, at this place, you can get cream cheese. I'm fucking telling you, cream cheese is a great thing, and pizza sub with cream cheese is wonderful. So good.
We know my bagel saga with my uncle, but I do like cream cheese.
Yeah, God, it's so good.
It's so awful for you, but
it's so good. Anyway, I love cream cheese. Anyways,
Philadelphia cream cheese. I must have ate it like 8 times a week when I was a kid.
And I made a really good gravy last night.
You made a good gravy?
Turkey gravy? Like a beef gravy. From drippings.
Drippings?
Did a pot roast.
That sounds hot.
Oh, it was good. Anyways, that was my weekend. It was drippings. It was so we did that, and then I finished up The Witcher. It was fine. It was good. I mean, I'll watch more of it. I'm not as like all gung ho about it, I think, as some other people are, but it was a worthwhile expenditure of my 8 hours or whatever it was.
I felt like garbage this weekend. I was gonna edit a Flea Market Madness video. And I just felt like, I don't know, I just felt like I'm just being run down. I'm leaving a little sick today. So I watched, my new thing is just documentaries. I love documentaries now, documentary series. So I watched Wild Wild Country, and that was excellent. It was about the...
Yeah, you're telling me about that one. I gotta watch that.
Osho, semi-cult, kind of cult-ish, the people that set up a whole town, really. They set up a commune in Oregon, bought all this land. They set up a fully functioning town. Then they invaded the town and bought property because they tried to force them out. A big power struggle politically in Oregon.
Okay. I know the story you're talking
Fascinating.
About. Fascinating.
You can't make it up. So I watched that. And then afterwards, I watched the disappearance of Madeleine McCann, which was about the British couple that their three-year-old was disappeared in the middle of the night. Three- or four-year-old disappeared in the middle of the night when they're on vacation in Portugal. And it's just like... And then it was just so the twists and turns, and then them at odds with the Portuguese police, because then the Portuguese police turned on them, and then everyone turned on them, which was like, people were like, how can you blame them when you have no evidence, and then manufactured evidence, and they still haven't found her, and it's just really just, like, you're just like, oh my God, this is just horrible how this happened. But, you know, something good came out of the end that they, like, they brought down a whole pedophile ring with one of the private investigators that were hired to find her. So, like, there was some good
candidate. Well, that's good.
Yeah, because he was, I mean, this private investigator was trying to track her down, however means necessary, and you gotta go to the underbelly of the world to try to do this stuff. But they never found her. And it's one of those things where, you know, you can't give up hope because there's stories that come out every year about kids that are gone for 10, 15 years that are found.
Sure.
That aren't, ended up being killed. And it's one of those things where you hope it's one of those situations. But it's like, oh my God, I can't imagine being a parent in a situation not knowing what happened to my kid. That's just like the biggest nightmare you could have, you know. And it really showed how awful the news was in treating them. And even treating people that were even just remotely connected and just accusing everyone around that was in that, that community, that was like a Portuguese resort there. Just, you know, but you have to love, nonfiction. And then I ended up the weekend watching, it's a short documentary, it's like 45 minutes. Something I had heard of, but didn't know there was a documentary. It was about, a guy in LA accused of murder. And then he didn't know at first he was at a Dodgers game. Then he was at the Dodgers game, but they couldn't really find evidence he was there at the Dodgers game. It's their word, you know, the family against the prosecutors. And then end up where he actually is on tape when they filmed. That was the episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm where they went to Dodger Stadium. If you ever saw that one, where he brings Larry. Hires an escort, a prostitute, so he can use the carpool lane and get to the game quicker. It's that episode. It's one of the early episodes. It's hysterical.
Oh,
and
yeah, so, okay, yeah.
So the guy's on screen with his daughter at the game, and that helped exonerate him. Otherwise, it was like this guy could have went to prison forever for a crime he clearly didn't, you know, commit. But the prosecutors were all gung-ho that he was the guy based upon eyewitness account that was the guy I saw him, and it wasn't him, obviously. So just, you know, more of a lighter hearted one day weekend for crime documentaries there. So real quick, you can pick up CU Podcast enamel pins at ultimatenintendo.com. We sold a few last weekend.
Pin our faces on yourself.
Yes, our lovelier cartoon Visage.
Visage.
Like a visual massage. Also, you can get a certain NES and Super Nintendo guidebook there. And soon, Ian, you'll be able to purchase Not For Resale, a video game documentary, at the web store as well.
Whoa, wow.
In Blu-ray form, and I'm trying to figure out the
Holy
digital
smokes.
One.
Holy smokes.
I don't know if I should just start kicking Ian in his shin sometimes when
Holy
he
smokes
for saying this stuff. And I'll have the trailer on there. Speaking of trailers, Ian, we got a couple to discuss. I don't know if we have to watch the Morbius one. Did you see the Morbius trailer?
No, I don't care.
So Morbius is the Jared Leto-led in association with Marvel, they say, because it's not an MCU movie, but they're trying to elbow you to think it is. So they're like, from the studio that brought you Spider-Man Homecoming and Far From Home, that was really, you know, Marvel Studios that produced it. We won't say anything there. So they're trying to, like, make it seem that it's MCU, but it's clearly not. But in the trailer, there's a poster of Spider-Man on the side saying murderer, which references, spoilers, the end of Far From Home. And then they put in Michael Keaton as Vulture for no reason at all, just to have you go, oh, I remember him from the first Spider-Man movie, saying, hey, what's up, Doc, to Jared Leto as he walks by. Because I guess Morbius is a doctor. I didn't know he was Doctor Strange, a doctor that becomes a vampire. It's a vampire movie. It's Morbius.
Dr. Vampire is my favorite soap opera.
Morbius is a C-plus lister Marvel anti-hero that I guess people will see this if they saw Venom, but Venom's a lot more well-known than Morbius. But it's so weird because Jared Leto was just tossed aside unceremoniously as Joker. He's never going to play Joker again in the DCEU, which is in shambles right now. But I am looking forward to the new Batman movie, by the way, which has nothing to do with the last Batman with Affleck.
I don't think I'm looking forward to anything DC at this point.
It's
I was kind of hoping to. I thought maybe we were getting to a point where I could, but there's fucking trailer for 84. Like, I want to see it, but
it looks good. I think it looks good.
It
was fun. The first Wonder Woman.
It was great, and I was excited for a sequel. But I just
your I'm heart's less, just like
I'm
no.
just less excited now. I think it's like we talked about it. I think it's partially the nostalgia. It's like, oh, let's milk the 80s, fucking grab it by the teats and pull as hard as we can. It's a combination of that and the fact that I'm just kind of superheroed out.
Well, someone said to me, in terms of Back to the Future, if they made Back to the Future today, they'd go back to 1990. Just put it in perspective. Really put it in perspective how old we are and how much time has passed.
Yeah.
In the 80s, 55, which is like, trying to think of 55 now, that's like another century. It literally is another century, but that's like another...
Yes, but that's is.
But it's another world to think of 1955. Even 85 is like another world, but not like 55. Because 85, you had computers and some technology. 55, you had none of it.
You mean 85, yeah.
Oh, so I mean, yeah, 85, you had like... I could live in 85 and be happy. I probably could, even knowing what I know now. At 55, there's no way in hell I'd be able to, you know, live and enjoy anything. We don't have anything that...
Well, there's lots of video games for you to not play in 1985, so you'd be all right.
But we had video games. That's the thing. Like, we had everything, almost everything we had in 85, except for, like, the internet, we really didn't have yet. CompuServe and, you know, we had the bulletin boards, the BBSs, which BBSs. You were on, but I wasn't. So, like, that's the point. Anyway, what was I trying to say? Yeah, 30 years can be a big amount of time or not, depending upon where you are. We're in a period of time now where technology is going up exponentially. In you know what I mean? Like, so now you can't imagine 30 years from now when you have nanites inside of our bodies, like curing broken cells, when no one will have diseases in probably 50 years from now, that we're on the cusp of something great here that me and Ian are going to miss out on.
That's just the Morbius trailer.
We're just missing the Morbius immortality. That's what I'm trying to get to here. But... we also have a trailer for Super Nintendo Land that I want you to watch.
I already watched it.
You did watch it. Yeah. Damn it. I wanted to get your first impressions of it, of you seeing it, about what that was.
My first impressions were not good.
I almost feel like we should put it on the background again. It's a music video that's advertising a theme park where I don't know what I'm supposed to... think while I'm watching this trailer.
Well, that's what I said last night. So we were alerted to this dropping sometime last night. I think was when it came out, and so I stopped what I was doing, which was playing Mario Kart, and loaded up the old YouTube on the Switch, real handy.
Turn that dial,
and pulled it up. And I don't know, people weren't really saying anything, but they seemed excited. So I pulled it up and watched it with Vonnie, and I mean, Vonnie was almost like, I'm less excited now. It, whatever it was trying to do, I don't think it did a good job.
It showed everyone, you know, this is a joke I've been made ever since the Switch came over. Everyone playing a Nintendo console is between the ages of like 18 and 24. There's like this weird age range that they're like dead set on. This is our demographic. No sure. one really old, almost no one really young, even in the video. I'm like, everyone's older.
That's advertising, Pat.
Yeah, but they're getting away from the kid part, which is weird. When you watch Nintendo's advertising the past few years. I'm just saying it's strange. That's all.
So basically it shows people running around a CG Mario world. The best thing I can say about it is that it's probably trying to show people what it might look like.
Oh, no, there's kids at the end there. Okay.
But it doesn't show any actual shots of the park in construction. It doesn't show any like actual themes, and it doesn't show any actual chunks of rides. All it really does is convey the idea, okay, we're going to have a Nintendo-themed theme park, and you're going to use your phone while you're there.
There's a couple shots of people on the phones connecting or what have you, sure.
Yeah, and I mean, It shows
some, like, Mario Kart.
It shows the Mario Kart. It shows some platform stuff. It shows people dashing towards a flagpole.
It shows people avoiding fireballs with a smile on their face and also running away from thwomps. Like that's like they're we're running away from getting crushed, and I'm like, huh.
It shows the Yoshi. It shows like the bunch of Yoshis on the on the mountain. So I mean, looking the only thing I did was I looked at it, and then I kind of pulled up the images that we talked about, and like the layout of the park, and it looks like what they show in the commercial is kind of similar to what they were talking about in that leak that we discussed.
Sure.
But that's about it. There's, like I said, there's really nothing in that, in the trailer gives you any ideas to really what it's going to look like or be like when you get there. It's a bunch of CG in action sequences.
When I think back and back into the good days of New Jersey, whenever I'd see commercials for the Greater Westchester County Fair, You might have seen commercials for that even in Buffalo.
No.
No, you didn't? Okay. Westchester County is a little closer to me. Or seeing Boatcraft Amusement Park commercials. Shout out to Boatcraft. Rest in peace. Or Six Flags Great Adventure. Do you have Six Flags in New York?
Yeah.
So whenever those commercials have... Remember the weird old guy dancing to Venga Boys, We Like to Party?
Yes.
And things like that. You saw pictures of the park.
Right.
And rides and people... Whenever they had, do you remember Fright Fest? They showed people, oh, do the haunted hayride and do this. The point is like you saw what was being advertised that you could do. Here, this is a weird CG mock-up of your experience, but they have a dance routine and weird stuff that you're probably not going to do at the park. So at this point, to me, it's almost like a teaser awareness trailer, but they advertise it even as a music video where world-class hitmaker Galantis... And worldwide popular singer Charlie XCX collaborated to create the Super Nintendo World music video. I was like, well, you hired him to do it. So, I mean, it's just strange to me. Obviously, it's probably too early. They're trying to get this for the Tokyo Olympics, which makes sense, and that's later, obviously, in the summer.
Yeah, I mean, the trailer says, you know, come play this summer.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not trying to be too cynical about it, but I felt nothing watching this.
No, neither did I.
I feel something.
I'm excited for the idea of a Nintendo... theme park. I think it'll be fun, but this is the sort of like trailer that I would expect them to put out when they announced the idea of it. Like, this is something that I would have thought I'd see like a year or 2 years ago, not 6 months before the park is supposed to open.
Comes off a little cultish, the video, I have to say. Everyone's wearing the Mario hats and everyone's smiling, and
yeah,
it's a little
it wasn't a good trailer. I don't think it did what it set out to do.
Okay, there are some. They do sprinkle in the young kids. There's no one over the age of 24 in this video. I just think it's interesting. That's all. You gotta have some old people running around like, ah!
Yeah, I'm gonna be there fucking with my knee brace on.
with your hot Yoshi cane, Yoshi colored walking stick. Yeah. I'm surprised they don't have those. Maybe they do. I don't know. Well, check out the trailer there. I think it's interesting. And speaking of Nintendo announcements, Ian, what do we got going on in the Pokemon world?
So last week. By the way, this is the official crossover from intro into the actual podcast. Just want people
to
know.
Well, it's an audio podcast. Well, you need a designation for the video.
I'm just saying, you know, I mean, we're officially now into the meat and potatoes of the podcast. We're out of the intro.
We're out of the hors d'oeuvres.
Out of the intro. Get in the zone, the intro zone. So last week there was a new Pokemon Direct. They announced some stuff. I'd say there's two big things they announced. The first is the expansion pass for Pokemon Sword and Shield. The expansion pass is $30. $30! me money!
Did you go for a Three Stooges thing there for
no,
a second?
That was Mr. Krabs. From SpongeBob. Me money! I don't know what's going on. So for $30, it's going to come out in two chunks, two doses, two squeezes, two pinches. What is wrong with me right now? The Isle of Armor expansion comes in June, and the Crown Tundra comes in the fall window. Fall window. There's
fall
no
window.
There's no absolute.
Don't fall into the window. It's the fall window.
No. I think it's interesting. So this is going to add new areas to the game. New areas that, according to the news that is out there, the news, you'll be able to access without having completed the main game. So kind of like, I don't know why this is what I'm thinking of, but like when you get an expansion for say like a Skyrim or something like that, it's not a sequential like expansion. It's not necessarily post game stuff. You can go and do,
you can go
immediately and play.
Sure.
It's going to add new wild areas. The wild area in Sword and Shield was one of the big new things that they did in Pokemon this time around. It's a kind of like a little open world segment that you can run around and explore. You can catch Pokemon in it. It's not like a route or a defined path necessarily like usually you find in Pokemon games. The big thing you do in the wild area is you can fight Dynamaxed or giant Pokemon with other people. And it was my favorite part of the new game. You could do like camping and cooking, and you could do some multiplayer stuff. You couldn't really meet up necessarily with other people, but you would see like other people running around and playing. So they're going to expand upon that. The Crown Tundra, which is the later expansion, is going to be adding some other sort of co-op gameplay in, which will be interesting to see. The big deal is it's adding over the course of the two expansions over 200 Pokemon that are not currently available.
Oh,
in Sword okay. and Shield.
So people that were pissed that their Pokemon wasn't in there, they might be coming back.
They might be coming back. So there's going to be 200 more that are added. Interestingly, and I think this is a good thing, you know, a lot of people have been complaining about how, oh, they're hiding Pokemon behind a paywall. Well, in a way, if you want to catch them in Sword and Shield, you'll need the expansion.
Okay.
However, if you don't buy the expansion pass, you'll still be able to transfer those 200 Pokemon into Sword and Shield using Pokemon Home.
Once they do the expansion.
No. That's what I just said. Before. You don't need the expansion. If you don't once the expansion's out,
in the game in order to do it.
Right. So even if you don't buy the expansion, but say you have them in a they'll copy of Sun and Moon or X and Y or whatever, so, and you have them on Pokemon Home, you'll be able to transfer
Home
them in.
Is a cloud service they're coming out with.
Yes. Okay. That's another thing that they mentioned. That I didn't get a whole lot of news on. I don't think they nailed the price for it.
It's coming in February. It lets you store monsters with Pokemon Go, Pokemon Let's Go, Pokemon Sword and Shield. You'll be able to transfer your monsters from Pokemon Bank on 3DS to Home.
Yep.
Then they'll be available in Sword and Shield if they appear in the Galar Pokedex.
Right.
That's the old one? Old Pokedex?
Galar Pokedex is the Pokedex for the Galar region, which is Sword and Shield.
So, in theory, at some point in time later this year, you're going to have a majority of the Pokemon will be back into this.
A majority. So, I think there's like 400 or something in Sword and Shield. If they're adding 200, that takes you up to 600. There's, I think, like 850 or something.
Okay.
So, you're still missing some. I still understand why people would be upset about losing legacy Pokemon. I still think it's something that does not need to be as big of a deal as it has been.
You know, you should threaten developers.
Yeah, definitely don't do that.
Because my pocket monster friend is in a game.
It's just, this is how the game is going to be now. And I think they're going to keep doing it forward. Going forward, I think they will stick with this idea. And I think it looks, I've mentioned it before, but I think this is kind of like a trading card game rotation system. I think they're going to rotate them in and out for various generations.
Maybe this is just the new way they do business, whether you like it or not, where they'll just do like DLC of different banks of characters over time. Maybe next year they do another
who knows
set of characters. Why not? Maybe that's the way they look at it. Well, it's not worth our time to do all whatever 900 at once. But if you want to buy them, we'll put them in.
So the big thing, the other thing that I would mention here is this is in lieu of a special edition. Pokemon, with the exception of X and Y, has always had a special edition game. There was Yellow, there was Crystal, Emerald. Platinum, my brain, Black and White 2. They skipped one for X and Y, and then there was Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon.
So the special editions combined everything?
So the special editions didn't exactly combine it, but they did sort of like this does. It adds like something new to the main story, like a new area or a new like part to like the story of the game. Sometimes they change the story. Some of them have different stories entirely, like Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon have different stories. Black and White 2 have different stories.
Okay.
But the game itself stays mostly the same. They would charge full price for those. So on the 3DS or DS, that'd be like $40. So this is $10 cheaper. And the big thing is you don't have to play through everything again to experience the new stuff. This is stuff that once you get once this DLC comes out and it's in the game, you don't have to play through the whole story again just to experience the new stuff. You can jump in. It's just modifying your existing game.
Okay. So the special edition doesn't give you both versions of the game before. It just adds
It's a new version of the game.
It's a third version.
Third version, usually with some added content.
Okay, so you still have the choice of which one you want to buy, but they're trying to get you to rebuy it again for the new content.
Instead, sure. This obviously makes far more sense. I feel like this has been the route they should have gone as soon as it was an option. Just make that new content DLC.
Well, Well, yeah, they got it figured out with doing like three versions of almost the same game every console.
Yeah,
they got it down pat, I would say.
So
okay, so $30 will be available for purchase. It's already available for purchase.
You can purchase the pass. It gives you costumes, the extra, and you, like a little bit of content. Very little. You can catch Slowpoke.
Slowpoke? Who's Slowpoke?
You can catch a Galarian Slowpoke. It's a dopey looking Pokemon.
Is it cute?
It's cute. It's cute and dumb.
There's also the announcement of the Pokemon Mystery Dungeon Rescue Team DX.
This is the one I'm real excited about.
Okay.
Mystery Dungeon. So Mystery Dungeon by Chunsoft is a series. It's a group of games. There are all sorts of them. There are Dragon Quest ones. There are Final Fantasy ones with chocobos. There are standalone ones that use their own characters. And then a very popular subset of that was the Pokemon Mystery Dungeon series, which started with Pokemon Mystery Dungeon Red on the Game Boy Advance and Mystery Dungeon Blue, which was on the DS. These are remakes of those two games combined, essentially, with a nice new art style. They are turn-based, like, you move, enemies move. Roguelikes. They're dungeon crawlers. They're generally fairly difficult games, although the Pokemon ones are usually a bit easier, but they're still fairly difficult. And there's a demo up now. I beat the demo already. I love these types of games. I love dungeon crawlers and roguelikes. I love hard games where dying means you lose all your items and shit like that. And this is one of those.
You gotta be careful. You can't just go in willy-nilly.
So this is cool. One of the things that I like about the Pokemon Mystery Dungeon series that is different than the mainline series, well, besides everything, I mean, the gameplay is entirely different, is you don't play as a trainer. You actually play as a Pokemon. And the Pokemon talk to each other and have dialogue, so it actually adds some personality to Pokemon that you normally don't get in the main games, where they just... they're animals. They
sure.
chitter. They say their name over and over again. The fun thing about the Mystery Dungeon games is, like, at the beginning, you'll take like a little quiz. It'll ask you a bunch of questions, and it will assign you a Pokemon based on the answers.
Oh, okay.
And there's like
personality.
Yeah, I think there's like 12 or 15 of them. I'm not certain.
Okay, that's cute.
It is.
You get like RPG points assigned to, or no? You just start with your Pokemon.
You start with the Pokemon, and I mean, you have stats and all that. Yes.
Sure.
Yeah, anyways, I'm very much looking forward to this. This comes out in March. I was hoping for a Meteor demo. Some RPG demos that have been coming out lately, like, say, the Dragon Quest XI one is like 10 hours long.
Jesus Christ, 10-hour demo?
Yeah, I was upset when this was over in like an hour.
You want a 10-hour demo? You got to pay for that. 10 hours?
Well, the thing is like...
holy shit, Ian.
I would be fine with an hour-long demo if I could go out and buy the game that I was playing immediately. Now I'm just going to sit around.
Games are 10 hours long.
I mean, there they are. I want more. I'm upset that I can't go buy it now. I like Mystery Dungeon. I like those games.
I was thinking of like playing like those shareware. Doom and Wolfenstein aren't 10 hours long. Those are like, you can beat those in like an
hour.
Oh, I
know.
And
I'm not saying every demo should be 10 hours. I'm just saying coming off the heels of something like that, I was hoping I might get lucky.
Ian got excited.
Very long demo.
He wants his Mystery
Dungeon. I want to play it now.
He wants his Mystery Dungeon. Well, you're excited. That's good. It's not, you can be excited about games. Just don't be.
Yeah. I'm excited about this.
Pokemon
wear little bandanas around their neck to signify that they're part of a rescue team. It's adorable. They all look so great in their little scarves.
You get a whole band of them.
You
team up with a bunch
of your Pokemon. You all get together and rescue other Pokemon.
Is my Poliwhirl in there?
It's heartwarming. I'm so excited.
Poliwhirl's my dude, because it's the only one I really know about.
Poliwrath. Do you like the buff one?
There's a buff Poliwhirl?
Yeah. Poliwrath.
Poliwhirl was the... back in the late 90s, Jersey Shore, back when Pokemon was first becoming a thing, they had, you know...
Look at this fucker. He's strong as shit.
Oh, yeah. Poliwhirl's my dude.
That's Poliwrath. That's okay. Poliwrath.
Poli's my Pokemon. Anyway, they had the Crane games. They're probably worth money. This is like the original plushes they had, like 97, 96. Probably like the first run. And I got a Poliwhirl. So that was my guy. I just put him in my car. Put him in my Geo Prism. Back in the late 90s, I didn't know. I was like, oh, this is cute.
This guy's ripped to the tits.
Is he in Sword and Shield?
I don't know.
He better be.
I have no idea.
I'm going to send a nasty email to someone if my Poliwhirl's not in there.
Don't even joke about it. Poliwrath. Sword, Shield.
Is he in there?
Doesn't look like
it. Oh, well, now I don't want it anymore.
Yeah.
My childhood is ruined. Do you see how it works?
Yeah.
My childhood
sucks.
Ruined. Sucks now.
Sucks.
Life has no meaning anymore for me, unfortunately. So.
So, moving on.
Some retro gaming news. This broke a few days ago. I've reached out to the owner for comments, since I've communicated with them before. JJ Games, which is one of the larger online retro game retailers. You know, if you think back to like DK Oldies was one of them on eBay. It had a huge, there was always two or three on eBay.
JJ, DK, Lukey
Games. Those are like the three big ones. There's always like a fourth one maybe. I used to buy manuals from a lot of them back when I was trying to get my manuals collection up, because sometimes I do like buy two, get one free or things. But anyway, so JJ Games is also responsible for PriceCharting.com. They run PriceCharting, came up with it, which is a great tool. A lot of other websites use it. The NES app uses it for game pricing. Is it 100% accurate? No, but it's the best thing you sort of have when it comes to this. And I communicated with JJ in the past. JJ also in the past has owned things like he owned one of the Campus Challenges going back. And then he owned sold an NWC car within the past couple of years. He did a giveaway, I believe, for the NWC off the top of my head. So they did. He's a big-time collector as well. He's been in the sort of the heart of the retro game community for a long time, been a part of it. So on January 10th, they announced on Facebook that they're going out of business. Thank you for 20 great years of gaming. I've been truly blessed as the owner of JJ Games. JJGames.com started in my college dorm room and has provided for me and all our employees for many years. Unfortunately, the gaming world has changed. Not as many people want physical games anymore. We aren't selling enough stuff to keep the lights on. Over the next few weeks, we'll be liquidating all our games, consoles, and hardware. Prices will decrease every day until the stuff sells. Please check back every day for deals. So now it's started. When you go to the website, you see the prices, and it's based off they're probably off their price charting. Then it's probably going to decrease, you know, percentages and take value off of there. And I have mixed feelings about this, and I don't know exactly what this tells me. This is a large retailer. There's a picture on the Facebook page of, you know, they have their little warehouse of all their inventory lined up there. And it's interesting because, as you stated, console generation's popularity, it goes through the years. It wanes. It gets more popular, then it decreases again.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering what percentage of inventory. I actually sent out an email as soon as I found out. I don't know if I've heard back. I'll check. I want to ask, you know, what consoles are selling and what isn't. You know, if it's cartridge based, obviously NES has been sliding down. You would say even 16-bit have been sliding down for a few years now.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the most popular stuff we're selling right now is definitely,
it's now disc based.
64, GameCube, and we're starting to see a lot of interest in PS2 again.
So I wonder if this is maybe the problem is there's too much N64 inventory, there's too much NES inventory laying around. Because, you know, we're talking about businesses like this. This isn't, you know, like a video game store. People walk in the door. They use bots, potentially, and they buy stuff online. They buy lots of games.
Right.
And they buy stuff that's cheap. But when you think about the accumulation of potential inventory over years and years of this, who knows? They could have, like, you know, 50 copies of NES Ninja Turtles laying around. That it's hard to get rid of. They could have,
depending on what kind of scale they're buying, and that wouldn't surprise me.
That'd be easy to do.
There are games. You know. There are games that we have copies of that we will never. I mean,
you have like 30 bases loaded, probably, right?
A lot of bases loaded. A lot of golf.
Yeah,
stuff like that. Yeah,
and you have to pay to get them. Say 10 years ago, but doesn't mean you're going to ever sell them.
Right.
Or make your money back even if you sell them. So it could be one of those situations.
Yeah, it's one of those things that comes, whether you're buying lots or doing trade-ins, you know, to a degree, you can pick and choose what you want when you're doing trade-ins, but most of the time you don't. The customer's going to be happier if you take everything. So, yeah, you accumulate stuff that you'll never need. You'll never have to get rid of, or you'll never be able to get rid of normally.
Oh, you actually responded back. I did say it was for the podcast, so I don't think there'd be a problem sharing some of this. Some of the issues causing our close are specific to JJ Games, and others seem to be industry-related. Sales have been down in 2018 and 19. 2017 was one of our best years ever, but halfway through 2018, there seemed to be a Google change that pushed our content lower on search results. Oh, it could be something with SEO there, too. This was the biggest impact in 2018, but sales on eBay were still strong for us. In 2019, it declined in all locations. It is always hard to say that any decline is industry-related or company-specific. Anecdotally, from talking with our customers, there are fewer casual buyers than there used to be.
Yeah, it seems that way.
People who are buying a game for their kid are buying a system to relive their childhood. I think many of those people are content to play digitally or buy one of those mini consoles with all the games included. We postulated for many people that would be okay.
Sure.
NES is still strong, and so are GameCube and SNES. Genesis has been much slower now that their virtual console device came out. Price charting is doing well, and traffic is up versus last year, so there are still game buyers and sellers out there. But price charting focuses on the collector's market and not so much on the casual. So I think collectors are still strong, but casual buyers are not. There you have it. GameStop-wise, I did ask him this because I'd heard this rumor. GameStop-wise, we used to be a large buyer of GameStop retro games.
Mm.
When GameStop, I guess, decided to pivot, what was it, like a year or so ago. But only their cosmetically damaged stuff. We bought hundreds of thousands of dollars worth from them over the last few years, but that inventory totally dried up in the middle of 2019. That's when they stopped, I think, taking a lot of it in.
Yeah.
We don't buy from them anymore because they have nothing to sell. Okay. So that was one of the things I was thinking about. Maybe they bought too much from GameStop, and now they were stuck with it. I thought that maybe that was
sure, part
of it. It sounds like they bought hundreds. This is told you the scale of the business. They bought hundreds of thousands of dollars stuff just from GameStop.
Yeah, it's nuts.
This is a huge business.
Yeah.
We say DK Oldies, Luke Games, and maybe one others, and then you have for them, NES is still strong. So it's really the casual market disappearing.
Yeah.
But that also affects prices overall because then you have less buyers in general. But the casual buyer, that's interesting because the casual buyer is what starts you off until the collectors come in. It's interesting, and now the casuals might be dying off for some of these systems, the collectors are left. Then at that point, I always said this. If you're collecting these systems, you've had 8-9 years to get these games. The collectors have all the cheap common stuff. That's the first things you find and buy. So at that point, what we just talked about, if you have a business and you have the cheap common stuff, that's going to be hard to sell at this point for some of these consoles.
Mm-hmm.
It just will be. And it might be even hard to sell some of the uncommon weird stuff that only the hardcore collector wants. You know what I mean?
I don't have any particular examples off the top of my head, but I mean, even a few years ago when stuff was popular, what you sell in a store, at least, I can only talk about being in a store, but what you sell physically in a store is going to be different than what you sell online where everyone can find it.
We have a universe of buyers.
Yeah. For instance, we had a bunch of really nice boxed Sega stuff come in, like console-wise.
Genesis?
Yeah, like 2 years ago, yeah. Like a really nice boxed Sega CD. Box Genesis, box power base converter, like a complete really, really nice Dreamcast. And we sold them for considerably less than what you would get for them online. The Sega CD went for top dollar. But some of that stuff, like, for someone to walk into a store and be like, I've been looking for a boxed power base converter.
Yeah.
If
you're not a crazy person named Pat, it's going to be hard to find that.
Right. It's going to be hard to find the buyer for it. So you sell it for cheaper. Anyways, whatever. I got sidetracked. I think it is worth bringing up, not trying to go ham on them here, but pricing on the website. A lot of these online stores do tend to charge more than eBay does. Looking through the comments on one of these.
Yeah, there are comments that are upset with some of the pricing.
$100 for Super Mario Sunshine, that's insane. That's like double what we would charge for it.
That could be part of their algorithm, that it's automatically going from the price charting algorithm, I'm guessing.
Sure.
And maybe it's not knocking off someone that are sealed or what have you. But
$47 for Eternal Darkness disc only. That's what we would do probably a complete copy for.
I saw someone complain about the price of GoldenEye being double about what you can get for.
I saw an $80 Mario Kart on here. That's way more than what we charge for it. So
That doesn't account for everything, though.
No,
because
no.
I'm looking at some of their NES prices, and a lot of them are reasonable. They're like the going rate.
There's right. Like, you can. That's what I wanted to say. The pricing can scare people away, absolutely, and that can be part of it. But I don't think it's the only thing.
No, and especially if you're
there's definitely market changes.
Especially if you're the true casual. And you're seeing this, you're not going to hunt around for the best deal. You might just say, oh, JJ Games, I'll go there and I'll buy, like, you know, just 10, sure. 15 NES games and whatever. If I'm paying 10, 20% more than eBay, who cares?
So pricing can definitely be part of it, but it would not be the only thing.
Right now, you can get Bump and Jump for $3.46 in stock. There you go.
I love Bump and Jump.
It's a fun game. We like playing on the marathon. Yeah, it's definitely tied, looking at, like, You know, Gyrus is $9.32. So it's definitely tied to price chart, and they're not round numbers. Super Pitfall, $13.27. Barbie, $4.88. Cobra Triangle is out of stock right now. So yeah, when you look at the prices, you can be like, okay, some of these are fair, some of these are going right.
Fair.
Some will be higher. Akari Warriors, you know, a high glide for $7.33. Is that too much? But then Mega Man 3 is only $15.72. Is that too little? Like, I don't know. I don't keep track of the prices anymore. But it's just interesting to see when it's based totally off their price charting algorithm, which, you know, is probably the best you can possibly do.
Sure.
It's interesting to see the different, you know, if you would you be able to sell Ghostbusters 2 for $11.50 in the store? You know, would that sit there for a while? You know, I don't know. It's one of those things where, to me, at this point, it's just, do you have way too much stock for people to now come in and buy these cheaper games?
Sure.
You know, will you be able to still sell a River City Ransom at $25? You might, since that's one of the more popular titles in Esoteric.
Yeah, actually, River City Ransom sells for about that all day.
Yeah, because that's one of the famous ones. And then you have, you know, these modern indie games that ape the style, or even semi-sequels that come out, things like that. But, you know,
it's still in the public mind.
Yes, but maybe not, you know, let's see, Adventures of Bayou Billy, or maybe not Fester's Quest, or maybe not, will you sell Jaws for $7 easily? That's really the question.
Actually, Jaws sells like,
does it?
Crazy. I think we charge $5 for it, but all I'm saying
underrated is, game, people.
Jaws is pretty good.
Jaws is fun.
I would say Jaws
three
is,
stars according to a certain NES guidebook. Above that,
probably the best LJN game.
Jaws is fun.
Simple. It's fun.
Play Jaws. It's enjoyable little arcade RPG-ish romp.
RPG-ish?
You build up your stats.
Okay.
Your power of your attack.
I would call it more of a shooter than an RPG, but
I was like, Back to the Future is a shooter?
Back to the Future is a shooter.
Jaws is closer to being a shooter than Back to the Future is. That's for sure.
Shooters. My favorite shooter. Back to the Future.
I think it's just action. That's the genre for there. But anyway. But yeah, will you be able to sell Russian Attack for $5? Will you be able to sell Rambo for $7.50? That's the tough questions. But these are the common games back then that sold a ton that nowadays no one cares about. That's the whole point. So best of luck, and thanks to JJ for responding to me in a timely manner. Good on him. But you know, I've communicated back and forth from time to time with JJ over the years here. It's interesting that, you know, I don't know, this isn't, you know, the death knell, I don't think, for other stores going under, but when you're talking about one of the largest operations, he just sees the writing on the wall and says like, okay, I got to cut bait.
Sure.
And it doesn't necessarily mean he'll take a loss of some of the stuff, because who knows? Like I said, this could be inventory he bought 7, 8, 10 years ago, you know, with bots that buy off lots of 75 games for like, you know, $2 each.
Thinking about fishing games now.
Think about cutting bait with Ultimate Fishing Simulator.
Yeah, any number of fishing games at my disposal. So many fishing games at my disposal.
Hey, Ian, you know, it was Christmas. I wanted to treat you for a couple there.
I have so many fishing games.
Well, you can go buy, how much is, no, I won't look at every fishing game. You can buy Little Mermaid for $9.72. There's a fish.
How much
that.
Is Blue Marlin?
Blue Marlin? Okay, this is, and that's an uncommon game. Blue Marlin.
It's a fucking gem of the system.
$20.83. It's an uncommon game. It's semi-hard to find, and it is fun. I guess that makes sense. What do you sell for that, Luna, you think?
10.
10? Okay.
Complete, I think it's like 20 to 30.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, I almost bought it complete the other day. It had been like the first NES game purchase I've
really?
Made in years. I almost bought it from work, but it had like a tear on the side. And I was if I'm going to buy a complete Blue Marlin,
I might have it.
I'm gonna get a nice one.
I might have a complete unboxing.
Yeah.
I might have to check that. Sorry, anything else going on here? Or just like, you know, do you think this is a woe, like the sky is falling, or no, it's just sort of it's a peculiar case because it's such a huge retailer.
It is what it is. I think the heat has cooled a little bit, but I don't think this is necessarily a death knell for
all physical games,
brick
yet.
And mortar retail
in
general.
It could be a cautionary tale of maybe not overbuying for specific systems when the trends change. Maybe that's what it is too. When it comes to it. Does Pat have Blue Marlin complete in box? I want to say I do. I do, Ian. That might be the first game gone from past collection. It's on the shelf there, I don't think. It's in the garage. All right, Ian's we'll have to work something out here.
I mean, you're more excited about... I mean, I just was just saying I might.
I'm just saying, mine's probably in decent shape, that's all. I also have Blues Brothers complete.
Gross.
That's really hard to find. That's what I mean, I have this... I don't know why I have some of this stuff. Why do I have that?
I don't know.
And, of course, Castle of Dragon, complete, because why? Anyway, okay, moving on here. Are you still using one of the big wireless providers this year? Have you asked yourself why? What are you paying for between expensive retail stores, inflated prices, and hidden fees? You're being taken advantage of because they know you'll pay. Enter Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile provides the same premium network coverage you're used to, but at a fraction of the cost because everything is online. Mint Mobile saves on retail locations and overhead, then passes those savings directly on to you. Ian, I know like five people that have signed up for Mint Mobile the past few months.
Mint Mobile makes it easy to cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month.
Yes.
Every plan comes with unlimited nationwide talk and text. With Mint Mobile, stop paying for unlimited data you'll never use. Choose between plans with 3, 8, or 12 gigabytes of 4G LTE data. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and keep your same phone number along with all your existing contacts. Ditch your old wireless bill and start saving with Mint Mobile.
All you need is your own unlocked GSM phone. If you own your phone and it's not unlocked, you call up your provider and say, hey, you, by law, you got to unlock my phone. And then you can do whatever you want with it. All right, to get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free, they send you the SIM card, all the information to sign up. You get on the app. It's easy. You go to mintmobile.com/CU podcast. That's mintmobile.com/CU podcast. Cut your wireless bill to only $15 a month. At mintmobile.com/CU podcast.
Big news out of the Microsoft camp this last week.
Our reporters are our sidelined Microsoft reporters on the beat.
Big news. Microsoft Xbox One X games, Series X. Microsoft Series X games.
Did I write it wrong on here?
No, it's just everything's wrong.
Xbox Series X games
are initially going to be cross-generational, meaning they'll be playable on an Xbox One. Don't ever make that fucking face. It looks like wet oatmeal. It makes me sad. Making your fucking cream of wheat face.
I used to love cream of wheat.
Yeah, I don't care.
I have baby fat that's still cream of wheat.
So, let me talk. Xbox Series X games.
No one.
Xbox Series X games will initially be playable on an Xbox One and on an Xbox Series X. They'll be cross-generational. There's supposedly not going to be any exclusives for the Xbox Series X.
It's going to be a while?
For a year to two.
Be a while.
Year to two. I fucking hate you. I hate the name of this console. I hate it all. On the surface of it, on the shiny surface of it, that seems like it's fucking pro consumer. You can you can play these games on your old shit.
A pro consumer.
Hey, we're nice. You can do it.
I'm a pro consumer. No, it's pro consumer.
It's pro consumer. You can do it with what you got.
What do you got? What the fuck? These are my gun arms. All aboard the Xbox X train.
My gun arms.
I'm heating up here. I'm laughing too much.
Fucking pumping out those cross-generational titles.
Figure the guns.
Anyways, I think this is a bad idea for Microsoft. Just going to jump right into it. It's dumb. It's dumb. You're taking away the entire... Why are you doing it? You're taking away the reason that people buy your console for games that they can't get on another console. So you're going to put out this system, and then it's going to... What do we got here?
Well, we've said this... Not the meaning of psychics when it comes to this, but we said 2 years ago that Microsoft doesn't care about selling consoles anymore.
I don't think they do.
As soon as they went cross-platform with Windows 10, they don't care. They just want to sell you software.
This is the further smearing of This is the further smearing of console generations to the point where I don't think it's going to matter anymore.
By the way, this is an interview with Xbox Game Studios chief Matt Booty. He said other first-party Series X titles will also be playable on Xbox One. So he said, as our content comes out over the next year, 2 years, all of our games, sort of like PC, will play up and down that family of devices.
Yes, and that's exactly what they're going for. We've said this.
Yeah, I mean, meeting our psychic, it's easy to read the tea leaves and see that this is the future of consoles, and they're just computers. And on computers, there's no cutoff date for usually when you can play a game. It won't play as well as a brand new computer with a brand new graphics card, but you can still play it and have fun.
Right. It's blurrier. Between, like, yeah, eventually that your computer's not going to be able to play that game.
You have 40 frames instead of 60 frames. You can still have fun. You know, maybe you have, you know, you don't have the super high res in the distance, seeing the polygons a mile away. You don't see the draw distance comes closer. This is how PC games have been for 25 years.
So
at this point,
I think this makes sense. I think it's a natural progression of understanding that consoles are going to start meaning less and less. There's two ways to look at it. You have the PS5 way of looking at it, which is this is still a console. And then you have the Microsoft way of looking at it, which is consoles are kind of not going to be a thing anymore. That's our take on it. And we're going to release this more like a PC. The problem is I don't see this being good for the Xbox brand.
I don't think they care.
I don't think they care.
As long as they got their Game Pass and they can sell a million Halo Infinites on whatever console platform. They don't care.
Right.
They're just making money. Microsoft's a software company.
I guess my thought is I feel like they're putting out this Xbox what fucking Christ. This Xbox X Series.
Series X.
I'm sorry. It's just Xbox, remember? The fucking Xbox. No, you have to fucking talk about it. I hate this. I hate it. I hate this console generation bullshit. I can't do it. This is so annoying. I'm done with it. It's
time to quit the game store.
Video games, people. You fucking talk about it. I don't want to. This is so frustrating to me.
Booty noted. I just think it's funny. His name is Matt Booty.
That's rude.
Booty noted Halo Infinite developers 343 Industries and Skybox Labs are definitely going to be doing.
Let the man have a last name.
Definitely going to be doing things to take advantage of Series X features. He didn't expand on what that means, but given the upcoming console has hardware accelerated ray tracing, variable refresh rate, and 8K bullshit capability. 8K is bullshit, sorry. It's reasonable to imagine developers will tap into those capabilities. So they're just making like a PC game. You have your super high res ability or your normal one that most people will use on the Xbox One. That's all it means. That's all it means. What's wrong, Ian?
Fuck, I just...
You're done with the name?
I'm sad and broken.
This hurts the most? This hurts Sony the most. Because Sony will be the last one clinging for life saying, oh no, these are consoles. You have to keep buying the new upgrade every 2 years.
I don't think this hurts Sony the most. Well, I don't think this hurts Sony much at all. I think this helps Sony because people will look at the PS5 and they'll look at the X1 and... And they'll go, why am I going to buy that system? It doesn't do anything special. I'm going to buy this system. It does something special. There's exclusives.
But
I don't think this hurts Sony.
Those are, but you just fall into the marketing trap. Just because there's exclusives doesn't mean it's doing something special that the PS4
right,
can't
but
do.
I know, but that's the thing. It's people are going to fall into that marketing.
Okay.
People who want to buy a new console. This is what I'm getting at. Microsoft is doing everything in their power to very quickly change up how people view consoles, but Sony's not doing that, and I don't think people are going to buy into it. I think people are going to be like, yes, I want this one with the exclusive games, with the power in the hood, under the hood, under the box.
Sony's done the same thing with the different PlayStation,
yes,
PS4,
but
Pro
if they have exclusive games on the PS5, people are going to think this is the better buy.
We'll see. I look at this
thing.
It
makes more sense.
I love
this. This is not doing anything special. Why would I do this when I can do this already with my Xbox One? There are things
special.
I can't do with this.
Okay. Okay.
I'm talking launch window time here.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right about that. Like, if somebody has, like, say, 10 great exclusives next
fall, I think that's going to... I don't think this is going to work out well for Microsoft.
Halo Infinite's going to sell a bazillion no matter what.
Yeah.
So they don't care.
Right.
Where they don't care where it sells. Remember,
you know, if they
remember,
don't, why should I care about it if they don't care about it, Pat?
Ian, I feel like I'm getting attacked.
I feel like I'm being attacked. I hate this
topic. Remember you said last week is that you don't make money on the consoles anyway?
No,
So you don't. Why would Microsoft care if
because
they don't sell?
Because it's metrics, it's optics, it's visualization. Okay. Oh. It's they're going to lose the battle. It's a fight that they're losing. It's a war.
You're worried about the console war. You're a correspondent. you're a wartime console correspondent with your little hat on that says, you have the bulletproof vest that says media on it, the flak jacket.
Press the press tag in my hat. I'm done. I'm done with this topic. We're moving on.
But,
we're finished.
Listen.
No.
But I'm no, we're not finished.
We are.
We're not finished.
Why not?
You're not allowed to be finished because you just beautifully summed up why Microsoft will win this because they don't give a shit about the consoles and they don't make them money. They don't care about the optics. They're going to sell you sell 50 million Halos. It doesn't matter where.
Yeah, like tune in, turn on, drop out, man. I get it. Sure, they don't care, man.
But that's mostly pure profit compared to the consoles. What's going on with this segment?
I hate it. It hurts my brain to talk about this. It's like literally painful.
It's literally painful? Okay. All right, Mr. Sony. Mr. PS,
I'm not, like,
Mr. PlayStation fanboy, I get it.
I was a 360 fan the entire 360 generation. I just don't think this is a good idea for selling units.
They have to
care a little bit. We say they don't care, but they have to care a little bit because they're putting out the box. They're not going to sell the units in the box.
Yes, but they're going to sell Halo Infinite wherever you want.
Right, but...
On your GameCom, you can play Halo Infinite maybe. They don't care. They're still getting your $60. And that's mostly profit compared to the consoles that they got to fucking manufacture for a couple hundred million, $400 million, put up the money, and, you know. But people will still buy the new
Xbox.
We
still have topics to talk about. I'm so exhausted.
I mean, you're red-faced about it. I don't know why.
I'm so exhausted.
We're not talking about Toys R Us coming back here, buddy. We're talking about Xbox games being available on whatever console.
I'm having a meltdown. I'm having like a live realization that none of this matters, and I hate it all.
Remember, the podcast topics mostly don't matter to real life, Ian. You're right.
Oh,
are you done with the podcast? Is this it for you?
God, I'm done with this topic.
You can always just do extra napkins.
I'm just done talking about the fucking Xbox Series X. You have it written down, Xbox One X Series. That's not helping me. None of this is helping. It's all bad. This is what I'm doing. Look at me. Do-do-do-do-do. Highlight it.
You can't delete it because Kieran has to edit that.
Boop, it's gone.
Okay. Sorry, Kieran. I'll undo that.
Pat, take us to the hands-on.
Please undo that for Kieran.
Please.
Okay. Speaking of game consoles,
fine,
Ian.
I'm undoing it for Kieran.
There's a couple of consoles.
For Kieran.
For our editor. Speaking of game consoles, we forgot to touch upon a couple of CES topics. You look at me like you want to fucking strangle me right now. So, hands-on with the Atari VCS, a strange streaming slice of nostalgia. This comes from PC Mag.
I have not read an article in a long time that really, like, goes out of its way to bite its tongue.
By Will Greenwald. The Atari VCS won't be competing with the PlayStation 5 or the Xbox Series X, but it's an interesting new console nonetheless. We took a close look at it at CES. So, the VCS, Atari folks, the past couple years... Our other Kieran McCarthy, our author article, he would should go to the like a hotel suite. Atari would be set up at some hotel suite, I guess, away from CES to show off the console.
Mm-hmm.
So they reported here that it's just a surprising article because even when just looking at the pictures, you realize something strange is amiss here. So they show the two different...
What is this, fucking build your own Atari?
It's like Build-A-Bear, but it's for an Atari.
The green stripe or the yellow stripe?
So the first picture you see the Black Vader version of it.
Only $562 with controllers.
The Onyx version.
Sandbox mode.
It's $390, Ian, all right?
Sandbox mode.
We don't want to get, we don't get raked over the coals for saying the wrong price. That wrong price is going to be
I thought I was being, like,
okay.
Exaggerated.
You don't want someone reviewing Tekken USA to come after you. Anyway, so they show the Black Onyx Atari version and then the wood grain front version. And in the picture, there's like different colored strips for each of them. I guess that's different. There's different like birch colored, and I guess like
you can have a red, you can have a green, you can have a yellow, you can have a wood, a darker wood, a lighter wood, a cherry wood.
But then they show it hooked up. You can't make this up. They show it hooked up to an LCD monitor, Ian, and it's literally the startup screen for Windows 10.
Yeah, that's the picture they've got there. Windows 10.
With a mouse hooked up to it and a looks like the same keyboard I might own somewhere there. It's the sandbox mode. Atari was eager to demo the VCS PC sandbox mode.
Because they have nothing else. So the article talks about how there's like 100 classic Atari games. And then it talks about the AntStream streaming stuff.
Gaming stores we brought up before, which right, is a lot of European computer
games. A lot of European computer games and stuff like that. Also, they are they're doing like a... We talked about it once. They're doing like an Atari VCS specific build of that streaming sure. service. It'll probably have more Atari games on there. Yeah, I mean, the article is like, yeah, 32 megabytes, that's enough to play some games, in parentheses. They go right into the sandbox mode, said that it's good for some light gaming, that it was running Fortnite. It's not going to be doing a whole lot. The article basically says what, I mean, in a nicer way, has said what we've always said. The price on this is prohibitive. It's an unattractive price point, especially when Sony and Microsoft have new new offerings coming out this fall.
As a game console.
And it's it's maybe a hobbyist computer, maybe. Yeah,
they're saying that for the price point, for if you're looking at it as a computer, it's not bad. As a computer.
Right.
That's what they're saying. So, primarily for enthusiasts, it looks to me like the Atari VCS is almost purely an enthusiast system. This is for classic Atari fans and PC tinkerers looking for a slick platform they can play with. That's such a weird slice. Like, how small is that slice on the Venn diagram for that? I like the design and flexibility, but it's hard to get past the price when Sony, Nintendo, and Microsoft will all offer much more mature game ecosystems and either more processing power or mobility for around the same price. It feels like the Atari VCS is gearing up to take on the same oddball niche as the NVIDIA Shield TV, the PlayStation TV, or the Wii U.
Yeah, these are not things you want your system to be compared to. You don't want your system that comes out sometime in the future to be compared to a Wii U, which failed years ago.
It seems almost destined to be the game system your weird tech head friend eagerly pre-orders and either swears by as a very specific platform for exactly the types of games they like, or modifies it into a home theater PC/Plex server, a server/Bitcoin miner purely because they can.
The problem with that, and I think that's even too nice, is you know, the whole, it's going to be, you know, this platform for one type of game. This isn't going to be like a niche console, like how the Dreamcast was great for fighting games and sure. the PC Engine was great for shooters. It's not going to do that because it's not around in a time where there's any developers that are going to make things exclusively for this.
Absolutely not.
For it to become that sort of system. No. You know what I'm saying? You can't, that's...
There's nothing you're going to be able to play on the VCS that you can't play better elsewhere.
Right.
Or the same game.
And there's nothing, and there's absolutely nothing. And this is different than, you know, this doesn't even have like a special weird controller like the Amico does, where, you know, they can keep saying, just wait, it's going to be best on the Amico. There's nothing about the Atari VCS where it's going to be the best for anything.
Well, they said the controller is, you know, good build quality, but it's a controller you can buy in,
I was
going to
say,
form.
But can't you buy these controllers and use them on PC? I'm pretty sure they were, because they were just selling the joystick controller, which looks kind of nice, honestly.
The joystick looks fine. They put a little red top on the thumbstick.
Oh, I meant the classic one is neat looking.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's, like, for $60.
These aren't proprietary, you know, game pads that they're, you know, thinking up from scratch. Or the joysticks. I mean... So at that point, what do you have? You have controllers that they said to their credits, decent build quality, or excellent build quality on the controllers. I also understand though paying $50 still for a one button Atari 2600 controller. I just don't want to get that.
No,
like who wants to do that?
It's neat, but I don't like. It's a neat looking controller, but I don't know that I would actually buy it. Like I want to pick it up and use it.
I have a glow in the dark LED one, Atari one, USB one sitting on my floor somewhere, literally over there, Ian. Yeah. That probably costs you $15 online to buy, and I don't picture this being that much better. Okay, I mean it is what it is. It's not as cheeky as Kieran McCarthy's articles. They probably locked him out from coming in the suite from looking at it. All right, well, as long as people get their pre-orders fulfilled, then at that point, I don't care anymore. They bought into this. They're going to get this and not play it.
You're going to get this. You're going to get the Atari VCS you deserve.
You're going to get what you're going to get because you deserve it. Well, I mean, like, if they want a little, I think we called it a little vanity piece, a little Art Deco thing, then you got it. When you're 45 to 57 years old and you grew up with the Atari, you know.
Something to tap the old peen on.
Exactly, Ian.
Yep.
It's still ribbed for your pleasure there. All right. Well, we'll check back once this actually is released and in people's hands. The other news out of CES that we didn't touch upon, we covered just about every retro
topic. This looks like fucking trash.
Okay, Ian, I was going to ease into it. The Retron Junior lets you play all your tiny Game Boy games on your giant HDTV. This comes from Hyperkin. So what this is an emulation-based console where you can it's a cute little cube. It comes with a little controller, and it's for Game Boy, Game Boy Color, and Game Boy Advance titles via HDMI out here. And what's interesting about this is that, well, this is, you know, oh, there's also composite out, according to this picture here.
Oh.
That's interesting. Ooh. That they included that. But this is, you know, basically taking the Retron 5 and cutting out all the console capability except for the three Game Boy systems, and here you have it. I mean, that's because you can do this on a Retron 5. You know, it's an emulation box that accepts, you know, games that you read the ROMs of, right? That's what you're doing here. And it's 720p output. And, to me, the question for this is whether or not you think there's a market for something like this. And I do think there is a market for this. I do. I do think there's people that maybe they're fond of just Game Boy. Maybe they just like playing the old school Pokemon Game Boy and Game Boy Advance and Game Boy Color games. And they think, you know, this could be cute to play on a big TV. I don't think this is a dead-in-the-water product. Maybe you disagree. I do think there's, but there's, again, this comes down to price. You can't charge $100 for this. This has to be $50 for something like this. And you'll probably sell some. That to me is what this market is. You can't stand the idea of this, obviously.
I fucking hate it. I don't like it.
It's ugly. Okay.
It's ugly.
You don't like the color scheme? You don't like the little gold and black?
No, it's dumb looking.
The Pittsburgh Steelers sort of colors? That's black and yellow. This is gold and black. I'm trying to think of it. You don't like the controller with four buttons and the little Super Nintendo looking controller?
Stupid. Actually, the controller is supposed to be fairly decent. It's the Hyperkin Scout controller.
Okay.
What it is. It's the wireless controller. No, I'm just... it looks like dog shit.
What looks like dog shit?
It looks awful.
The actual console or the idea?
Who designed it?
I think it's cute. It's like a little mini GameCube.
There's nothing cute about it. It's awful looking. It hurts my eyes.
It's sort of the same look as the Retron, the 2600 one, kind of.
I'm not
in terms of the angle on the side.
I'm not into the Hyperkin emulation boxes.
Okay.
Anything that they've done that's been, like, the Retron 5 was just kind of like a mess all around. I don't think, I'll have to, we'll, I, and here's the thing, we'll have them at the store because people will want these. People will want these.
Sure.
I don't, depending on the price, and like the price that we sell them at, I don't always mind... Hyperkin stuff is like an entry level for people who just need to get the job done. You know, the Retron HD, the Retron HD2. These are all things that, for the price, get the job done. It's like we talked about in that JJ Games episode. There's a casual buyer. He says he sees that person leaving. But that's who this market is for. The person who comes in, gets a wave of nostalgia, goes, man, I'd love to play Super Mario 3. Hey, do NESs hook up to modern TVs? Yes, they do, but you can get this for... I'm like, they do in a way, but, you know, this Retron HD is, you know, $40, and it hooks up, boom, 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 plug it in, you're playing, you're good to go. I understand it, but I don't necessarily see a huge market for this, and I think the people who are looking for something like this are probably people who are looking for better options. Something like the Analog Pocket or the Consolizer.
Well, that's
going to
be a lot
like
more money, though.
Right.
And then you can't... Well, you can play it on TV, but you have to connect it via this... You sort of play it on a controller or the handheld device, but then it's going to the TV still. I'm trying to see reviews. I think the Retron 77 got decent reviews. I'm trying to find them.
Yeah, that one was emulation, too.
Of course. It's on Google. It's at 3.9 out of 5. That's Google. I'm trying to find an Amazon listing. So that you can buy between $60 and $70. Some places you can get it for under $60 for the Retron 77. So this is probably going to be $50, just because I think that 77 has it has like the switches and it looks like it has more buttons, it has more parts.
Yeah, I think this will probably be $50 as well.
I think once you get above $60 for something like this, you're not gonna have any buyers. I think it's interesting that they also included composite. Obviously, they probably did that with the Atari as well, because it would make sense. Did they include that with the Atari? It makes sense if it was an older sort of thing. But anyway, I'm just surprised they included it for this. That seems unnecessary. But maybe that's all in their one little board, their output board, so it's cheaper than them to do, not to switch it out. I think it's interesting. I think there's a market for it. I think there is. There's going to be a lot of Pokemon players, and are there any hardcore Game Boy players that are don't play anything else?
Interesting that I'll point out is I do think it allows I think I read somewhere that it allows for link cable. Which is neat. You'll be able to treat it kind of like you would like a super. You could hook up one to one TV, one to another TV, and do two players on two TVs there.
You can buy two of these and it'll basically act as two different Game Boys?
That's what I'm saying, yes. You'd need two TVs.
I missed that. Huh. That's interesting. I'm trying to think. It'd be fun to try it, I guess. It'd be kind of weird, right? Yeah, because you can't play multiplayer games without your own screen.
I'm looking to see if I can find it on here. I thought I read that somewhere.
But can you do Faceball 2000, with four TVs? That'd be cool.
You could. You could do it with 16 TVs.
Now someone will try to do that. But then you got to spend $1,000 buying these to do that. You got to buy 16 of these and spend $1,000.
And Jeremy Parrish is working on like a fancy, he's like ironing out all the kinks in like a 16-player like link
device
setup. So he can like do multiplayer Faceball at conventions. I think he tried that last year or the year before.
Creating like a single link to do it without having piggybacking it.
Well, no, you do. You have to link a bunch of them together. But I think I saw pictures of something online. Anyways, it looked like he was soldering up something special.
That's the dream. Faceball 2000 on Game Boy.
16 players.
I think I played it once multiplayer at my cousin's. My cousin had the... had the four-player adapter there. I think it was one time I did there. Okay. All right, well.
You know what? If this is for you, it's for you.
It's for me, Ian. The same way the Xbox Series X is going to be
for me. It's not for me.
Okay.
It's not for me.
Well, you'll sell them in the store. You'll turn a profit.
It's great.
At the store. Okay. All right. On to this. We're going to talk about...
I'm going to try to talk about...
Ian's in an ornery mood, this podcast. This is we don't talk about this too much about auction results from Heritage Auctions for the graded WADA video game auctions, but I think this is
good old ha.com.
I think this is an important one to talk about, and they run these every week, and some results are striking. So you go to Heritage Auctions, you get to sign up to see every past sales item result. And the other reason we're talking about this is because in February, the Nintendo PlayStation prototype is going to be for auction on Heritage Auctions. So some of the past ones that have come across have been startling. And some are surprising, some are not. And also, good old Sean from Reserved Investments, our buddy there. Congratulations on 1,000 subs, by the way, there. He's been talking about this stuff as well here. And
so we're going to go get dinner or something.
You want to wrestle on the floor right now? You're jonesing for something right now. So I want to go over some of these.
I'm feeling spunky.
This is like Ian 2015 from the podcast.
Anyway,
so the most startling ones. We'll go from top to bottom here. Some of these ones: a Mega Man first release sealed. And by the way, these are the Carolina Collection, which I know you love that being touted as a Carolina Collection.
Stop naming your collections.
These are the games that Dane Anderson, when he sold Nintendo Age, sold to the guy who owns GoCollect.com, who purchased the games and the website.
Does he live in the Carolinas?
I don't know, but originally they were Danes in the Carolinas. I don't know.
Dane was in the Carolinas.
Yes, he's in the Carolinas, so it's the Carolina Collection.
All right.
So is Rue, by the way. Good old Rue. So this includes the... Remember, this is not what the seller's all getting.
The Decena Collection.
This is a 20% markup because it's Heritage Auctions. So the seller isn't getting all this. They're getting 80% of this value. So the biggest one in the past few months was in November, Mega Man Sealed went for $75,000. 75 grand. And the reason that this is the first release, because I didn't realize this. These people are trying all these little first release, little minor things in order to pump the market. I didn't know that in the first box release, it said Dr. Wright instead of Dr. Wallen on the back. They made a mistake. So now there's like three or four of these that they've brought out. There's like, oh, there's a first Mike Tyson's Punch-Out slightly different. Rad Racer first box has different pictures. They're trying to find as many of these little differences as possible in order to create these first edition
to maximize ones. The lettuce harvest.
The lettuce harvest, yes. Donkey Kong 3 Seal went for $28.8. That's insane.
That's a lot of smackaroos.
Well, the Mega Man for $75,000 is insane. We'll get into that. The reasonable one out of all these was the NWC graded that went for $26,400. That's not super inflated over past sales versus these other ones. Bubble Bobble 2 sealed went for $19,200. Legend of Zelda, Rev A sealed. There's, $19,200. Super Mario Brothers seal went for $19,200. Panic Restaurant, $16,800. Mario Brothers, $15,400. A Contra sealed went for $14,400. My God. Okay. And so forth. And then a couple of loose Steam events went for 11.7 or 10.5. So not much over, you know, a regular cart price there. So it's interesting to see some of these get priced down there. But the bottom line is that obviously these are hyperinflated, some of these prices here versus even 2 years ago. 2 years ago, I don't imagine a sealed Contra going for over $1,000 even. That might even be high from a few years ago. I mean, these aren't games that aren't...
Graded or not graded?
I mean, I'm just saying graded. Not even not graded. I mean, the VGA stuff wasn't super hyperinflated like even these prices were.
Sure.
This is from the influx of obviously the comic book money getting into here. Here and doing it. But what's surprising here is that when you go to the bottom of the list, you have a lot of games not selling for that much that I would think would. If you go to like all the way down, you see stuff where you have sellers probably taking even a minor loss in there. A sealed Caltron 6-in-1, only $552 on there. That to me is sort of shocking to see that.
People were like, Caroline, no. Nope.
That's not a Carolina collection one. Oh. But it's interesting that you really see... Who knew the video game market before the frenzy of the past year and who didn't? When you see some of these prices, to me, the NWC cart prices to me would be lower compared to the frenzy going on with some of these other sealed prices, like the Contra, for example. But then when you get way down, you see a lot of the third party stuff not sell for anything at all, and stuff like the third, unlicensed stuff. You see losses being taken potentially by the buyer on some of these.
Friday the 13th, 192.
So at that point, you're like, I don't think that person made any profit because they only get 80% of that, and it costs them $50 to $60 to have it graded in with the shipping back and forth. They're not making anything on there. You know, you have to really hit for some of these games into the maybe $500,000 in order to really see a profit on some of these, in my estimation, on average. Then you see, like, you know, the Genesis stuff. Complete in box stuff isn't selling for much of anything at all. I see a Complete in box Die Hard graded for $240. I don't see that person making a profit on that at all, because a Complete in box Die Hard goes for a lot to begin with.
Right.
So it really shows you the different sets of buyers that are getting into this.
Yeah,
to
there
me.
Was a there's a Metal Storm that was like $312, and it's like, that's
Complete in box graded.
Yeah. I'm like, that's not that much more than
just a regular Complete in box.
Right, yeah.
So at that point, it's like, who's the market here? And then you get really down into it. Then you see where the losses are being taken. Where was the one I saw in particular? It was a sealed. Yeah, a lot of these are 100 to 150 range for the sealed. A George Foreman's KO Boxing, $132. That person probably took a loss there. Battletoads Complete in box for $130. It's like, who's buying that?
Pat Country's KO Street Tennis.
KO Street. Hey, that's my idea for another game. KO Street Tennis. There's no street tennis there. So the point is that you see a Mega Man X3 cartridge only graded go for $89. So that person definitely took a big bath.
They took a bath.
Took a bath.
They scrub a dub dub. They got all washed up.
But then you see stuff like Robo Demons for $74, where that person probably spent $74 just to buy the game, let alone get it graded. There. Right. So some of this stuff you have people just throwing out there to see what's possible, and they're not making any money back on it.
And it's interesting to see this too, because you know stuff like the Robo Demons, for interest in instance, there was you know, back in the especially like the early days of NES collecting, that was the stuff people wanted. That was the interesting stuff. That was the hard to find stuff. The weird stuff,
unlicensed stuff.
Stuff that didn't get huge, you know, print runs. And it's interesting now to see how much the game has changed, Son of Flynn. It's very different now. That stuff, no one gives a shit. No one wants it.
Well, because there's no significance to it historically.
Right.
So this is what's interesting about this. You want to hear something funny, Ian?
I always want to hear something funny. Hit me with the jokes.
So the graded sealed WADA game of Silent Assault went for only $67. It's more money to buy it sealed on eBay now at $140. It just shows you the different markets.
Weird.
And how...
Yeah, that's it's, right. It's just a completely different thing.
People that are going on Heritage Auctions, they want, oh, I hear Super Mario Brothers is going to be the game of the future. It's going to be Action Comics. What is this Silent Assault thing? Even though Silent Assault is a hell of a lot harder to find than a Super Mario Brothers, they don't care because they're wrongly or rightly, they're buying into the narrative of we're going to follow the trends of what we think it's going to be for comics, for video games.
Right.
And they could be correct, but it's just interesting that someone took a bath on that. And then, like, other stuff like that people aren't aware of. Like, oh, a Shadow Dancer goes for $65 graded, you know? It's just interesting to see this happen in front of my eyes. You see people that 2 years ago didn't know video game collecting was a thing to care about. And all of a sudden, they're pumping this money in. Sean, who I'm going to have Mimosa Brunch with, said the saying is, collectors aren't made, they're born. And that goes to show you what happened here, where... if you didn't know about it, all of a sudden you're just following the trends, you're just going off of what people are basically telling you was going to be the hot thing.
Yeah.
So you don't care about the Silent Assault. A collector like me, think, oh, that's really interesting because I was with it 20 years ago and I saw that this is a weird game. And now these people don't give a shit because they don't know about it and they're just following what they think is going to make them money. So it's interesting. Check it out. And there's stuff every week now. This isn't an advertisement, but it's so interesting how some stuff is going to go way below value that on eBay might go for more. Hell, maybe you can go on WADA, and I'm not endorsing this, but you can probably buy that Silent Assault for $67 and you'll get more for it on eBay. Someone will buy it on eBay for more money. I'm not saying you'd be able to make a huge profit, but some of this stuff is happening out here. They're pulling this stuff. They're the amount of sealed games year after year is going to be so small that isn't graded that you're going to be, everyone's going to be pulling the stuff off, but it might not be the best gamble.
Like sticky bread, just or this, monkey bread, just pulling or the cinnamony delicious this, hunks.
The sticky hand from the 25-cent machine. It may not be in your best interest to get this shit graded. You may not make a profit on it. We've been talking about that, especially for newer games, which I think is insane to get the newer games graded. I think it's absolutely nuts to do that. But we'll see. Maybe I'll start bidding on Heritage Auctions. Maybe they like this video because now you're going to look at two. Maybe get some deals and some stuff. I don't know.
God, I am just washed over with existential dread.
About what? About us pointing people towards Heritage Auctions?
Just all of this. Just
I can't imagine what it's going to be at Comic-Con this year. Because last year was a little goofy. This year it's going to be even more nuts at Comic-Con. Seeing the different booths have this stuff. Think about that.
A little goofy. I'm just thinking of like a tiny little goofy. Like
hell.
The dog.
Hell, maybe I'll bring my like you bring comics. I'll bring a box of games to sell to them at the booth if they want to buy them. I'll bring a box of Pats. I'll bring my Blue Marlin. he has graded before Ian can get it.
All right. I mean, it sounded like you were about to fucking pause the podcast and try to make a deal.
Hey,
right there.
Hey, I need some cash this year. I'm not gonna make. I need to get some cash this year. I got some stuff in the works I can talk about. I'm gonna need some Pat cash this year for.
What is different about Pat cash? What is Pat cash?
Pat cash is special. It's cash that you look crazy.
It's just money. It's just money. I don't call my money Ian cash. Well, it's just money. I have $5 in my pocket. It's not a special $5.
It's a cute moniker. It's like Patman.
It's not cute.
Wow, Ian's turning against the podcast.
No.
They're turning against the
not
state.
Not everything is Pat something. It doesn't have to be the Pat Goda. It doesn't have to be Pat Cash. It doesn't have to be fucking Pat Math. No, Pat Math doesn't have to be Pat Math because it's always wrong.
Ian, you are hurting. Ian, you're breaking my heart. I'm like Padme in episode 3. I don't know you anymore. And then you're gonna start force choking me before Obi-Wan saves me.
I'm gonna go,
Ian.
Gonna go kill.
Put her
kids.
Down, and he's gonna be like, "No, I'm choking Pat." Here,
I'm gonna go kill a bunch of kids.
You know, people in the comments would be like, "Thank you, Ian. Thank you, Ian. This is the end of the podcast. Now, this is the beginning of the end." You said you're gonna kill someone with a sword. What did you just say?
That's what the Jedi did. They killed the sword. They killed the kids.
No. Anakin did.
He did the kids wrong.
He sliced their heads off. Yes, he did them wrong. That was so unnecessary to show that, by the way, in episode 3. I don't think that was a necessary scene.
Ooh, we gotta show how dark and serious we are.
We gotta go PG-13. We gotta milk the PG-13 rating on this Star Wars movie.
We gotta make sure he has those smoky eyes for a reason.
He did have smoky eyes. He had evil eyes in episode 3. He has evil eyes. Why would you trust him when you already have evil eyes? I don't understand that. Sorry, I can talk about how bad episode 3 is for an hour and a half.
No, we're not going to talk about any more Star Wars.
No more Star Wars forever?
No more.
It's done? Not even The Mandalorian?
It's fucking done.
All right, so anyway, so like I said, Ian, if you want to make a deal for some Pat cash later don't throw my Order of the Griffin at me that's laying behind you. That's worth money.
The sound of my soul just leaving my body.
What's happening? Is this your New Year's resolution? Don't put up any Pat shit? It's Pat shit, I know.
Pat shit.
All right, moving on. All right, Q&A time on the CU podcast. Apologies to the patrons of the CU podcast. I can't say that because they're Ian-tron as well. They're Ian-trons.
The Patreons? Patreons?
They're Ian-trons.
Ian-trons.
They're Ian-trons. I thought I put out the Patreon poll yesterday that I did not, so we'll do it next week for you there. We have a Q&A, though.
We do.
And it ties back into our Xbox Series X topic. This is from at Om2K. Christian.
Wait, who asks? We're lost. We are fucking
Pat
lost.
It's right there.
Is
above.
It?
Yeah, it's right there.
Oh, it's on a different page. Whoa. I felt like we were out to sea without
Ian,
an oar.
This is the best Ian performance on the podcast in at least 3.5 years. Christian asks, with the PS5 reported to have backwards capability, all the way back to PS1, will this cause an increased demand in the previous generation titles?
Yes, it will. Looking at previous things that have happened in the video game sphere. Yeah.
we had a super off-road moment right there.
In the video game place. Whenever Microsoft would... well, rewind. Backwards compatibility is good. It keeps the previous generation stuff popular. However, with the way that Microsoft did it in the past, which was, it was interesting, like with the Xbox 360 getting updates with, some of the new original Xbox, like time would go on and they'd be like, okay, so Xbox 360 came out, it could play some original Xbox games, and then every few months they'd add a few more that it could play for a while. And when they did that, and they did the same thing with the Xbox One, with the Xbox 360 games, and every time that those new games would drop, the backwards compatibility would come up for it, those games would definitely get popular again.
People would come to the store looking
for
just
those games. We would see a run on those games. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 was a great example.
Okay.
Or was it Modern Warfare 2 or Modern Warfare 1? Either way, one of those, as soon as it became backwards compatible,
the COD
for like 2 months, we didn't have any copies for the
360. Because then people would probably think, I haven't played this in like 5-6 years. I can play it online again.
Right.
And have fun.
With the original Xbox... stuff that happened with Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic and a couple other titles, probably Halo, where they kind of get, by the way of them having to release this compatibility in bursts and updates, it kind of brings that game back into the public mind.
Sure.
Back into the public conscience. And so they do become popular again. We'll need to see how the PS5 does it. I think that we will see an increase in interest for old games, depending if it's like 100% backwards compatibility right off the bat.
Yeah.
I don't know that we'll necessarily see that sort of targeted enthusiasm like we did with the Xbox.
Because it won't be in
waves. With the Xbox 360.
So they said out the bat, we're going to come out with the PS5, and all PS1 games are compatible. All PS2 are. You think you get some people say, oh, shit, this is cool. I haven't thought about this PS2 games in a while. I'll go out and buy more PS1 games, because this will be like your modern way of playing, you know, a couple old generations of consoles that currently we don't have.
Yeah, I think it will definitely do a lot for the interest. I just don't know that I'll see any like particular like shortages all of a sudden, like I did say with like the modern
of certain
warfare.
Games.
But I do sure. think yes, I think especially with like PS2, if the PlayStation 5 does this, and especially if it has a way to maybe sharpen up the image or at least put it on a modern TV properly.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot more. I think we're going to see it would coincide very nicely with what I've talked about before, which is the PlayStation 2 is now kind of becoming that console because of time and age. So if the PlayStation 5 can play it, I think the one that we'll probably see the biggest spike in is going to be PS2, and that also coincides with people who grew up with PS2s now have money.
When you when the PS3 wow, the PS3 came out, what, 2007?
2006?
I think it was 7. Xbox 360 was first, and it was... Anyway,
okay.
It's been like 13 years.
Yeah.
Holy shit. So when you were working at the store then, and it was the first one or two batches were cross-compatible with PS2. Did you see an uptick in PS2 games? Or no, because people still had their PS2s?
No, I think it was because people still had their PS2s.
And still were playing them on their CRT.
And it was normal at that time. Like, from PlayStation 1 to PlayStation 2, PlayStation 2 could still do PlayStation 1. PlayStation 3, the original ones, they could do PS2. So I didn't see any uptick. Also, I don't think the games were old enough yet for that point to be forgotten and then be
sure,
interesting again.
Sure.
I think we're going to get a little bit of that with the PS3 as well.
Because now, wow, PlayStation 2 came out, 2000? So now it's 20 years later for PS2.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Microsoft has always been pretty good with the backwards compatibility, and that's something that Sony has always slept on. So I do think... as I've said, there's going to be interest. I think there will be an interesting surge of it because for the first time in a while, people will have something they can, a modern system, a current system that they can play those older games on. Yes.
Okay. I it's interesting. I don't know. I don't know if it's in Sony. It's kind of in Sony's advantage with Final Fantasy VII remakes to say, oh yeah, we are going to make you available to play the original Final Fantasy if you have the disc, but you're going to want
it. You can do it with there's digital versions now that you can get.
I'm talking about the disc though.
Sure.
It opened up to more people that might still have more.
I think will be interesting is I was actually going to use that as an example. I think we'll actually see people interested in a way like they were with the NES in some of the weirder, lesser known games, because they can play those now, and they'll be able to play those, and those haven't had numerous ports. Whereas something like the Final Fantasies, you can play those on basically everything. So I don't think I'll see a huge surge in interest for original Final Fantasy copies on PlayStation.
Mm-hmm.
But I think,
you might get it for games that there was no follow-ups to back then.
Right. I mean...
When they stopped making SOCOM?
SOCOM went through PS4.
It did go through PS4? Yeah. Okay.
I think.
I'm trying to think of something like that maybe isn't...
Shit.
SOCOM. When did the SOCOM series end here? I'm just trying to think of some franchise...
Right, maybe there isn't a SOCOM on PS4. It might have been PS3.
I'm trying to think of a franchise that might have existed back in the PS1 era and PS2 that died out. People might want to go Siphon Filter,
Jet Moto.
Is Siphon Filter still around?
I don't think Siphon Filter's been around since PS2.
Okay, that's a good example then. Something be like, oh, this isn't around anymore. There's no new games, but now I can play it again.
Yeah, or I think some of the other Square stuff that hasn't gotten a bunch of ports, like Vagrant Story, that'll be popular. Sure.
Also, I was trying to think of maybe some of the
Brave Fencer Musashi, stuff other than the stuff that's been re-released a billion times.
Sure. Let me see the last Siphon Filter game was 2007. So it's definitely been a bit.
Okay.
Not a while. Been a bit.
Been a bit.
we'll see what happens with the backwards compat ability. Okay. That's it for the CU podcast. What a weird uplifting. You got me through the sickness.
What a fucking ride.
I was sick and like... And I sweated out from the laughter. I sweated out being sick.
All right.
This was a vintage CU podcast, Ian.
Yep.
We got another 194 in us, I think. We're going to get the... We need the 388.
What a rush.
Get the 388. That's the number to quit on, 388.
388?
388. That'll be, let's see, if we're doing 50 a year, that's only 4 years.
Only 4 years.
You don't know what sponsors we'll have 4 years from now. We might have, you know, Tesla as a sponsor for their
fuck that guy
for their moon boots, or I don't know. You're against Tesla cars?
No, I'm not against Tesla cars. I just think Elon Musk is a fucking herb.
Hey, sometimes you need a herb in order to you know, upend the industry and get people to make electric cars we should have had 30 years ago.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, I talked to our buddy John. He said that a lot of the GM stuff's going to be electric in like 5 years. And I'm like, okay, that's only positive.
Our buddy John?
John D'Elia.
Oh, yeah. Good old John.
John's a good guy.
Granddaddy John D.
He's still pushing for video game years 90s, you know, hard, you know. You know. That was rough.
Not until we all have crow's feet. I'm probably getting there. I've been hard on this body. All right.
It's been a hard life for Ian.
I'm gonna go get some potting soil.
Potting soil?
I think that's what I'm gonna do today.
Is that a Home Depot?
Yeah, I think I'm gonna go to Home Depot and get some potting soil, and I don't know.
You want to look at my complete box NES games?
No.
Pick a few out.
No, I've got a succulent I need to transfer.
Oh,
Trey gave me a new succulent.
How's Trey doing? Good.
He's good.
He's good.
Yeah. My succulents are doing good, too.
All right. We'll get a succulent sponsor. We'll get a local greenery? Not a greenery. What are they called? God, I can't think right now. I'm all giddy.
I was going to ask you if you wanted a cutting, but you've got a whole fucking front yard full of succulents. So.
Well, snap a picture. Let me see.
Oh, the one that I have?
How big are they?
Oh, my succulent. I have a succulent. Big Daddy, and that's I just named it now.
Oh, so you cut off a piece and you can replant it?
Yeah, and you transfer them.
Well, let me see it. Right. I'll put you to work outside with my gardener.
No,
every
no,
Friday.
I'm just going to give it to you, and you can do what you want with it.
Okay, because I have a couple spaces out front I need.
It's very hardy.
It's hardy?
It's fucking breaking out of its pot, literally breaking its pot right now. Okay. I
had one in my, in the condo, I had one on the balcony of my condo. Remember that? Just sitting there. It was there for years. It was alive. I kept it
Francis.
Alive. What the hell happened to that? Did I bring that with me? Frank took it. But I kept it alive. That was the only plant I had. But it was big, and it was busting out, and I kept watering it, you know, like once a week. I almost missed that condo. You missed the condo?
No.
You missed how nuts I'd get because I was so cramped into
I was always waiting for something to fall on me.
You've knocked more stuff from my TurboGrafx.
Well, the fucking past. Shelf better.
What?
Then shelf better.
Shelf better?
Do a better job.
You make shelf a verb?
Yeah.
Shelf better?
Shelf better.
Maybe
shelf
better. We're done.
I'm going home.
We hit 90 minutes. That's when Ian's brain shuts off. No, your brain shut off about 40 minutes into this one. But it was fun. It's a fun podcast.
It was a good time. All right, everyone. See you next week.
Maybe a writing in a day or two?
Yeah.
Maybe?
Yeah, I'll write something as soon as I can fucking settle this down.
I like this. I like anxious Ian. It's great.
All right.
We'll see you later.
Bye.